Hey guys, welcome to the Reddit Sales and Business Development Professionals and Career Progression podcast. I have with me Chris Stocker, which I met through the subreddit, obviously. We've been keeping in touch for the past year, and you know, I think you guys are in for a treat. I know it's been a while since I produced a podcast, but yeah, no, I think it'll be good to get the momentum back and get the community engaged again. So, yeah, thanks, Chris. I appreciate you taking the time to share with us what you do. And, yeah, I'm really excited to have you here.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate the invite. I appreciate you reaching out. Exciting stuff. I think you've done an excellent job prior to this one, listening to all the other podcasts. It's been very informative. It's good to hear other sides of people's sales tactics and in their industry, man. It's been very educational. Definitely appreciate it.
Cool. Yeah, thanks for the feedback. You know, definitely when I the subreddit has been so it's such a big resource for me. I mean, I know like when I reached out to you and just connecting with the more senior folks in the subreddit, it's been amazing to get like the level of support and just you know, the just like the willingness to help out others and give back. It's so yeah, thanks for embodying what subreddit is all about.
Absolutely, man.
Cool. So, you know, what you're doing is a lot different than what I typically read about in the, you know, in the Reddit sales. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you're doing? You know, not too familiar with the natural gas and the pipeline and all that. It seems like a really interesting type of sales.
Right. Yeah. So, certainly can do that. I've been working for my company now for about 5 years, coming up on year number six. And what we're doing is a natural gas distribution pipeline company. Essentially, I get these large projects. If you're driving down the highway and you see big pipes sitting on the side of the highway, most likely it's coming from myself or a competitor. We do large OD piping for these natural gas pipelines. So anytime that they're drilling this Marcellus Shale up in the northeast, any of the pipeline that's going in the Dakotas, stuff that's going down in Houston, Texas, those types of pipelines are something that my company will sell the actual pipe that goes into the ground. So I'm working more or less with major utilities for you up in the New York area. Con Edison is one of the big guys. PSE&G, those guys are big.
Oh, yeah.
Those are my customers that are up in those typical those types of areas. So you think large utilities where you get your natural gas from? That's the industry that I'm in.
Oh wow, yeah, that's pretty interesting. Yeah, they're huge. Like you said, PSE&G, like. And Con Ed, like, pretty much they take over, like, the Northeast, right? Like, they have, like, a huge presence here.
Yep. That's what I've been working with now for a couple of years. So it's been fun. It's been quite up and down, but it's been good so far this past year. It's been real nice.
Cool. Yeah. So let's start from the beginning, and then we'll go from the past to the present. You certainly have you know, pretty interesting experience. You know, I saw that you're really big into sports and, you know, you were a coach for quite some time. Can you talk about, you know, sort of like your sports background and sort of how that's helped you and how that translates to sales?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was a college baseball player out in Indiana, wrapped up my degree and decided that I was going to go into law enforcement. My father's a Chicago police officer. He was on the job for 35 years before he retired, but I felt that that was going to be my path in life. A couple of years go by sitting on police lists and just being a big pain in the butt. My college coach called me up, asked me if I'd be willing to come back and coach for my college team and get my master's degree while doing it. So essentially I was a graduate assistant coaching baseball. As that wrapped up, a guy walked into the office that was very close to the baseball program, was looking to hire somebody in the Indiana area, Chicagoland area, to work with him. And I was just wrapping up my master's degree, and he was like, "Hey, why don't you fly down to Houston with me, meet with my boss, and see where it goes from there?" So next thing you know, I'm on a flight to Houston, get offered a position within a couple weeks, and my dreams of being a protector of the city of Chicago is now down the drains, and I am working in sales for the company that I'm currently with. So it's quite an interesting path. I didn't anticipate it going this way, but it was certainly something that I rode with it. I got my first paycheck, and I was like, "Yep, I'm in, sold."
Wow. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, that's interesting. I mean, it is common. I hear that, you know, typically people like don't grow up and be like, "I want to be a professional salesperson," right? It seems like it's sort of like you land into it, and then you realize there's opportunity here. And then, you know, obviously, if you're good at it, it's definitely a rewarding career.
Right.
So you always wanted to be a police officer when you were younger?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was planning on going into law enforcement of some sort. I'm a big guy. I grew up on it. I was an athlete. I always just figured that was going to be the part of my life that I was going to run with. But when I had the opportunity to get into sales, you typically have such a negative connotation of sales. Growing up, because you hear of, you know, guys that are working the deals and saying, you know, you can't, you got to buy now and you got to do this with me. And they're really pushing a lot of their product. So there's kind of a negative connotation that comes with sales. Now that I'm older and I start to realize it, it's not necessarily like that. Much like you are in law enforcement, being a public servant, you want to get involved with people, help people. And that's the way that I see sales. And that's what I really like about it. Somebody comes to you with a problem, it's your job to solve it. You're going to make somebody's life easier. And that's essentially what my job is. Mm. And that's what a lot of our salespeople are. As salespeople, your job is to make other people have an easier job in life. And that's the way I see it.
Yeah. Yeah, man, I wish I truly realized that earlier in my sales career.
Yep.
You know, I think I learned the hard, I learned after, you know, obviously, speaking to a lot of mentors and just from people that have been doing extremely successful. But in the beginning, I always thought of it as you do this because it brings you money, right? But obviously, a much better mindset or perspective is that you're the value provider. You create value for organizations instead of just this is about me. Right? It always has to be, you know, about the people that you're helping, not just about you, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't have said it better.
Yeah. So and, did you have to learn a lot about, infrastructure and oil and natural gas? Did they train you, or, how does that work?
When I first started, like I said, wrapping up an MBA and going straight into a corporate world, there's a lot of stuff that you take from an MBA and you try and apply it when you have very little experience. So trying to do that was a very tough transition when I didn't know the industry. So what they did is they actually put me inside, and I was inside sales for probably about 6 to 7 months, where I was doing a lot of quoting. And when my inside sales, it's not like inside sales that I typically read on Reddit. My inside sales is a lot of quoting. So I'm reaching out to vendors to get pricing. I'm looking up inventory off of our own distribution, and I'm putting pricing together for that customer. So that's what I pretty much did for the first 6 to 8 months. And then once I understood that, I was able to basically talk shop with these customers. Then I was able to go out on the road and meet with these folks face-to-face. And then drive the business from an outside perspective. So this industry is crazy, man. It's a good old boy industry. A lot of the people, and this is why I stuck with it, this is why it's a good industry for me to be in it, because I'm a little bit younger. A lot of these people have been in for 30-plus years. These guys are going to have to retire soon, and somebody's got to take their positions. And that's what I'm sticking with. Right. So these guys that have been doing it for 30 years, 30, 40 years, you know, they have a set way of doing things. So when I started dealing with them, I couldn't just walk into an office with zero experience and try and sell them on what we were doing. I'd have to have some sort of experience. So learning how to quote, learning the product, learning what we did and how we operated on an inside, really learning how to the ropes, the internal workings of the company, allowed me to go on the outside and successfully translate it over to sales and drive business that way.
Yeah, and so you mentioned, you know, obviously you, it seems like you learned a lot from your MBA. So, like, can you just, just explain a little bit more about, like, what particularly about the MBA helped you in this, you know, obviously this more complex, more, you know, business-focused conversations? What in the MBA?
Mm-hmm. Well, so a lot of my MBA was data analytics. We took a lot of spreadsheets, data, compressed them, pulled information from them, and brought out basically an end goal or an end situation that can provide us with a good business plan moving forward. That was one of the first things that I did when I started doing inside sales. It was essentially getting pricing for all this stuff, understanding where the market was, taking that information, applying it to quotes, started all of a sudden really driving our business up, and it was because we had a better understanding of where the market is. So my company is a large international company. They have stock, they have distribution channels, they have vendors, they have manufacturers that all work for us, and we have enough data internally to pull and judge where the market is. Now, for us, we do price per pound or price per ton for pipe footage or pipe lengths or whatever you want to call it. So we essentially do it that way. So when we see a fluctuation on our selling point, we notice that there's certain gross profit in certain pipe that we have. We either drive it back down or drive it back up, depending on where the market is. So if we start to see this common trait within our sales or what we're selling, then we can adjust our pricing. And that's like real-time data, right? So as soon as it gets sold, it gets put into our database, and then you can pull it up and say, hey, the last 2 weeks we sold X amount of pipe at this price. Let's keep it going that way. Or all of a sudden that, hey, we're not selling it at this price anymore. We're starting to sell it at a lower price. Then all of a sudden we'd have to drive our price back down. Okay, so that's typically what we did. As soon as I started, that's what the first thing I looked at was, where was our pricing at and how do we get consistent sales? Not just guessing. You have actual hard data to figure out where the market was. So that was pretty interesting, and that was one of the first things that I applied with what I learned in getting my MBA and right now.
Interesting. And you said that it's, you know, more of like a lot of your colleagues and people are typically older. Do you find that, do you have any advantage being a bit younger, or do you feel like sometimes like that is something that, you know, is tougher because the people that you are working with tend to be a little bit older?
No, you know, that's a great question. I was very intimidated when I first started because you have all these guys that have been around for ages. They've seen the ups and the downs. They've seen, you know, mass projects go down the drains. They've seen projects, you know, fly out the door, and, you know, they're operating within a couple of weeks. What I've realized and what I've taken from this is that they love to talk. These guys love to talk. They all have a story to tell. So what I did is I've taken a step back when I'm talking to them and working with them and say, hey, man, like, tell me about what this happened or when this happened. How was it for you? Like, it was 20 years ago. What do you know about that? Like, how? And all of a sudden you have, like, a good bonding relationship with that buyer or that engineer or that project manager, whoever it might be, because they want to teach you, because they see a young kid walk in the door and say, hey, this kid doesn't know anything, which is 100% true, by the way. So the first thing I'm going to try and do is understand and get them to educate me. So as soon as I, you know, lower myself and make them feel like they're bringing value to me and teaching me something, it all of a sudden our dynamic changes very quickly. And then they kind of help you along and guide you in certain situations. So that's kind of that was kind of the route that I went, being a younger person in a very older dominated industry. So
yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I think sometimes you get distracted by like the newer, like I guess the cooler or what you consider like the hip stuff. Like, you know, we talk a lot in the subreddit about like software sales and you know, cybersecurity sales and all these types of sales, but really there's a lot of money to be made in you know, what you're doing too, but you know, it tends to not be spoken about as often. So it's interesting. Yeah.
Well, it's funny you brought that up. There was just one, I don't know, it was a couple of days ago that somebody was asking about, you know, where are you, what are you selling and what are you making, you know? And I think like the top, I don't know, five guys, whatever it was, were all like some sort of industrial sales. And everybody was like, oh my God, I had no idea. I thought medical sales was the answer. I thought software sales was the answer. And
yeah,
they all are successful. They can be. But I think that a lot of this industrial construction, the engineering side of things, like you have to understand that our projects are multi-million dollar projects. I mean, they're not, our selling, if you want to call it that, is relationship based. It's not, mm-hmm. what can you do for me now? These are relationships that have taken, you know, years, months, whatever it might be, to gain trust, to get somebody to believe in you, and then to actually work with them. You know, I mean, the projects that I typically work on, for example, there was a purchase order that was placed today for $3.3 million with my company. This is a major utility in Kentucky, and we just got a purchase order for today at $3.3 million. And it's crazy. I mean, these are large projects. I've been talking with this guy for, I don't know, 7-8 months. We've been working together on this project, and there was enough talk between he and I that I think he built up enough trust within me to place this order with us. You know, I kept him in the loop. I communicated with him and kind of took that project from the start to the finish. And here we are 7 months later with a purchase order in hand.
Wow, yeah, congratulations.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it's
that's a big deal.
Yeah, it's a little bit, it's just a little bit different. I mean, it's the industry is just more of it's a longer process, it's a slower process, but it's like a more of a legacy sale, right? I mean, these guys are the same buyers, they're the same engineers, the same types of companies, they always come back to you. You know, you're a distribution company for them, they need your product, they're going to use you. You know, and it's just a matter of how much trust do they have that you're not going to screw up the deal when they need it, you know? So, again, it's my job to make their lives easier. So that's what they hired me for.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, you know, just from what I've known about you so far, it definitely seems like your competitive edge is just, you know, obviously like ability, like rapport, like just building trust, like you said, and just really just making a good friend, right? Like they treat you like one of their best friends, essentially. Right? It seems like that's sort of, I guess, your strategy, right? If you can call it that.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what it comes down to, right? So if I were to take you to a meeting with me, if we're going to go here in Charlotte, North Carolina, if we go to one of my companies right down the road, and I sit down in a meeting and you're with me, and I have a buyer in there, I have a group of engineers in there, and one of the first questions I ask them is, do you guys know us? Do you know anything about us? Do you know what we do? I'll try and get them engaging. Okay, well, how do you guys typically go about working with these projects or your major project? How do you guys go about it? What's your process? They explain it. And I say, okay, well, this is how we kind of do things. And then we build off of that. So I let them lead the conversation. I let them kind of guide me. And then I have, you know, I have my listening, active listening that I try and take notes on, pay attention, and try and guide their conversation to make it more of my own, right? So I want them to realize that they're doing, that they're asking for my help towards the end of the conversation because they're coming across problems, right? So if they have a situation where they have a problem with it, be like, okay, well, this guy, you know, he said that this is how they do it, and he could probably fix it, or he could do a better job. And that's where it starts. So then they say, okay, well, now we're going to trust Chris on this situation. And then we start working together. We don't screw it up. we prove them that we can handle the job, and then we build off of that. And then the purchase orders come, and then we work with them, and then we just build relationships from there. But it all starts with the trust. It's just making sure that they understand what we can do, what we can't do, and how we can work together to be successful, because that's what it is at the end of the day. They have a boss. Their boss is going to be breathing down their neck to do it right, because somebody's breathing down their neck to do it right. So it all just keeps on rolling downhill. So we're all kind of in this together just to make lives a little bit better.
Yeah, and do you find that, you know, obviously I don't know too much about this industry, but it seems like from the outside perspective that it is almost like a commodity where, like, what is the differentiator? Is it really just the salesperson and the relationship that you build with the customer? That's the only big differentiator?
Right. So it's definitely a commodity, and that's what is a little bit tough. It's a physical thing, and everybody can get their hands on it. Okay, so everybody has access to this. But where the difference is because we're a large company, we have major manufacturers that are like backing us, I guess you could say. You know, there is some different types of business tactics. Like I said, it's a good old boys club. So there are some companies that, you know, probably do some shady stuff behind the scenes to get price protection from manufacturers or mills. But essentially what it comes down to is how much effort are you going to work for me? How much effort are you going to put into work for me? So when these guys are coming to you with a problem, are they going to trust you to get the job done? And that's really what it comes down to. And it's trial by error. People have been burned. People will continually get burned. And then, you know, one company might love somebody, like might love my competitor and hate me. And then another company might hate my competitor but love me, but we do the same job. But it's just how we work together on certain projects, and you know, if we can be trustworthy to not, I guess, screw up business or make lives miserable.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I mean, I know you mentioned that, you know, you had Sandler training before. You know, do you currently use that? Like, would you say that's one of the methodologies that you use often?
So there's when I first started, I didn't really have much sales training per se. I guess it was just go in, take these guys out to lunch, get them drunk at dinner, and then hopefully see what happens from there. Now that I have had the Sandler training, I hate to admit it, but it has been great to have. What it does is it cuts a lot of it cuts really to the point. A lot of times you're going to spend in meetings with people and they're not going to be the right person. They're not going to be the decision maker at the end of the day. So you're going to spend 15, 20, 30 minutes with this person. And at the end of the day, when they're going to send over a purchase order, it's coming from their boss or it's coming from somebody else. Or when you don't get a purchase order, it's because of somebody else, right? So what Sandler did, and this is what I suggest to anybody, is listen as best as you can, question as much as you can, and really make people sell themselves to you, essentially. Nobody's going to say that they're not important in a meeting. Nobody's going to say, you know what, I have nothing to do with this, I'm out, you know. And they're always going to say, you know what, no, I do have some sort of influence on this. I'm going to help you. I can write a purchase order. I can get you to, you know, the end result. I can get you the purchase, you know. But what it really comes down to is in Sandler, what they do is they drive it home. Who's the decision maker? Okay, talk me through your process. And that's what I took from Sandler when I did it. And I apply that today. I apply that all the time. I like to use the rule of three. I try and make sure, you know, okay, say, you know, the purchase order is coming through. Hey, is there any reason why it wouldn't? What's the process? Why would it not come through? And if there's any snags, who do I talk to? So that really, it takes it three different ways to get kind of the purchase order to you. And it just reassures me that I am talking to the right person. Because as soon as they tell me, nope, Dave is the guy that you got to talk to get snagged up. Well, now all of a sudden Dave's going to be in on the purchase order process. Or, you know, Susie's Susie's got to sign off on it too. Well, why am I not talking to Susie? You know, there's different moving parts. So when I worked on the Sandler training, that's what it really helped me get to the point of who my contact's going to be. That's going to be the ultimate decision maker. And that it really has taken me to the next level of sales. Every meeting that I get, I go through a series of questions that it initiates, and it continues to kind of snowball into, at the end of the meeting, I know that I'm talking to the right person, or I know who the right person is. And that's ultimately what it comes down to.
Yeah, and how do you, thread that delicate line of, like, you know, obviously you want to, like you said, you want to make that person feel important as well. So, like, how do you manage it so you don't straight just be like, all right, well, you're not important. Let me just talk to your decision maker. Because I feel like, you know, some sales reps do that when they hear, like, the decision maker. They're like, all right, talk to you later, bye. And it's like, wait,
yeah.
Like, you should still, you know, they're still your friend. Like, you don't have to make them feel like they're, like, useless, you know.
Right. So what I like to do is in Sandler, and a lot of Sandler experts are going to probably hate me for all this because I'm probably butchering it to death, but a lot of softening statements, you know. It sounds like you're part of the process, but can you walk me through, you know, the remaining of the process, or who else is involved in the situation? You know, if Dave was around, you know, would we be able to get a purchase order now? Or is that something you could do? Okay, that's not something you could do. I totally understand. I get it. It's a big, long process. You know, you're in a big corporate company. There's a ton of hoops you got to jump through and all that stuff. Totally get it. But in the back of my head, I'm sitting there saying, you know what? This isn't the right guy that I'm talking to right now. Like, for right now, but I'm not going to just kick him out and say, no, that's it. But what I like to do at the end is say, hey, you know, if you're not the right person, no, I don't say that if you're not the right person, but if you're not the right person, you know, can you put me in touch with whoever the person might be, you know, if it's Phil or Colin, whoever it might be. But that's the way that I try and typically go about it. Like, I totally understand you're definitely an important part of this, but I want to make sure that I cover all my bases. So when we do, if we ever hit a snag, I want to make sure that I'm talking to the right people to expedite that as fast as possible.
Gotcha. That's interesting. I mean, I don't want to go, like, too far off track, but so, you know, obviously being a collegiate athlete, you must have had some pretty decent discipline and work ethic. Do you find that, generally speaking, like, athletes have a better, I guess, pain threshold? Because, you know, obviously sales sometimes can be a grind, you know, depending on the day and you know, I guess your perspective. But do you find
you figure a lot of people have all walks of life. It's not necessarily athletes are going to be better in one situation than non-athletes. You're never going to know what a person has been through to get to this point in their life. And so if my obstacles in life were athletics, somebody else might have, you know, schooling or might have problems at home. But each person that I believe is in sales has a drive from somewhere else. They're not just here because it's a job. They have that drive. So I think everybody that's been a part of sales has some sort of obstacle that they've overcome. And that helps create success out of it. And that's what I mean, absolutely. Being a baseball player, man, it was fun. It was great. Loved it. But I don't think that, you know, that separates me from anybody else. I think that everybody's gotten to this point in their life where they've all had obstacles. We've all had obstacles. And I think it's just a matter of where, you know, how you got here is how you got here, essentially.
That's interesting. I've never thought of it like that, but yeah, you're right. There is a sense of, like, I guess, like, a chip on the shoulder where you try to prove, like, hey, you know, I could be, like, I want to be successful for whatever it is, like, trying to, so that is a good point. I do notice that a lot of salespeople, like you said, it could be some adversity related to, like, maybe they grew up in poverty, or maybe they, you know, they had to do sales so they can pay off, like, their tuition, whatever it is. That is a good point. So it's just, yeah, I like that. That's a great answer. it's a very optimistic look in life, and it's also like true, right? Like you can't just assume that because I'm a collegiate athlete, I have really strong work ethic. I mean, I guess you, like, generally speaking, like, yes, but you know, like there's tons of other people that aren't athletes that also have equally, you know, the same type of work ethic. Right?
Yeah, man. I mean, I was forced to do it. I was forced to have good grades to stay eligible. I was forced to go to study hall because that's what you did. Like, you were forced to do that. You were forced to have to maintain a 2.0 GPA throughout your college career to maintain your eligibility. You know, a lot of these guys, you know, go to college and do this without being forced. You know, it's just personal drive. And that's what I've seen now. Yeah. Like, met a lot of people that were not college athletes, and I'm like, God, that dude is driven, or God, that girl is driven. That's unbelievable. And they, I was like, were you an athlete? Nope, not at all. Huh. Well, that makes sense now.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I'm glad you're able to dispel the stereotype, because sometimes I do feel like people ask that question, and it's like, you know, I'm sure there's better questions to ask that. But I do see that being asked in the subreddit a lot for some reason.
Now, if this were an interview for a job, I would definitely disagree and be like, nah, man, like, being a college athlete has taught me so much. But since this is casual conversation, no, this is typically how I see it. So
yeah, it's just a matter of having perspectives and being able to be convincing and persuasive enough to convince someone else to maybe kind of not change their mindset, but just like, okay, like, and this is my perspective, like, and then have them disagree with you. It's like, okay, like, that's true, like, that's a good point that you bring. Cool. And so you know, it looks like when you did a lot of the coding and a lot of the inside sales stuff, would you say, you know, that was pretty crucial and just, you know, building the foundation for your success now? Like when you were there, did you view it as like, oh man, this is not what I would want to be doing, or did you actually enjoy that work as well?
I thought it was, when I first started, it was a great challenge. You needed to go through that because, and I think everybody pretty much does. I don't think too many people could just go jump right into sales and without having an understanding of how the business works or how the industry works. So for my industry, it's absolutely critical for somebody to learn the inner workings of the, I guess you want to call it the steel industry, the energy industry, whatever you want to say. You absolutely have to go through something like that just to learn, you know, how operations work from a utility standpoint, how operations work from a fabrication standpoint. You just need to have that industry knowledge so you can apply that when you do go to the outside or the business development side of the company. Because you have to go in and talk to people and be able to relate to them, ask them the right types of questions. And I would have never gotten that by just going out and trying to sell stuff, you know, just trying to sell pipe. There's no chance that I could have brought any value to my customers without having an idea of how the industry worked.
Yeah. And do you get a lot of business from referrals as well? Like what percentage of your, like, do you get from, like, referrals, or is it, you know, do you work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. So absolutely. So our business, like I said, when I first started, I worked more on the power side. So think of a new power plant that's being built. There's a lot of stuff that goes into those power plants. One of them is a fabrication spool for a process system. That process system is typically handled by a fabricator that's either in Wisconsin, Tuscaloosa, Alabama, Utah. There's probably 10 major ones across the United States. And those people are, those are my big fabricators. So what I had to do, work with major utilities like a Southern company down in Birmingham, Alabama. They would tell me about a new power plant that's being built. Then they would have an engineering, procurement, and construction firm that does all the drawings on it and handles all the construction and handles all the purchasing. So first I'd have to talk to the utility. then I'd have to talk to EPC, and then I'd have to talk to the fabricator. The fabricator was actually
wow.
the people that were buying what I had to sell. My EPC firms typically didn't buy it. The end user very rarely bought stuff directly. But typically for my business, a lot of the fabrication would do the buying. So I had to bring value to my customers, the fabricators, by telling them about a new power plant that was going up or where they were at in the schedule for a current power project. So that's typically how I started 5 years ago, was in the power industry. So it was a very long, tedious process. I had a lot of contacts, and if you think of it like a big hierarchy, start with the utility, go to the EPC, then go to fabricators, and that's where it was. And each time there would be one utility, there'd be five EPCs, and then there's 10 fabricators that were all bidding on this project. And you never knew who was going to get it. You never knew who was in line to get it. So you had to be in touch with these people all the time. Now what I'm doing, working on like this line pipe, you know, it's a couple line items long, you know, two, three lines, but it's 20,000 feet, 30,000 feet, you know, of straight pipe. There's no bending, no nothing. There's no real fabrication. You essentially get it to the site and you put it in the ground and you weld it up and call it a day. So with these guys, these utilities that I work with now, they buy it. But there's also a little bit of fabrication that goes into it. So when I'm talking with the utilities, I also try and get them to give me the information on what fabricators they buy from. So these fabricators are local people typically to the area or to where the site is or the construction is going to be done. So there's less freight cost. So my referral process is talk to the utility and figure out where their fabricators are going to be or who's going to be fabricating for them. And I will try and get them to give me a virtual handshake by either sending an email and then copying me in on it, saying, hey, so-and-so, this is Chris Stocker from Edge & Murray. He's getting us pipe on, you know, whatever it might be. You know, you guys might want to hook up because, you know, he might be able to help you guys out on other piping projects. And that's typically how my referral process goes. But it's definitely
gotcha.
Good. It's a definitely good for us.
Yeah, and obviously it sounds like you have a lot of internal resources that you work with as well. You know, how important do you say it is to build really strong relationships with your internal resources, and obviously in addition to having external relationships, obviously?
When you say internal, what side of internal do you
You know, maybe people that provide like the quotes, the engineering
yeah.
resources.
Yeah,
like
so our,
anything internal. Yeah.
My success is based off of them, right? So I could go out and get bills of material all day, every day. But if I don't have somebody inside working the quotes, then I'm pretty much useless. So you have to stay in good graces with your inside salespeople that you are working with. So you always have to remember that your customer is not always right. And you always want to try and protect your own people because you have to work with them on a day-to-day basis. Your customer can fire you in 24 hours. You know, they could just stop working with you. You could upset them. That could be the last time you ever deal with them. The people that you work with on a day-to-day basis, man, it's critical to the success that you have in this industry. So your inside salespeople want to be successful, but you got to keep them happy too. So you can't call them up and yell at them. You can't bitch at them for being late or doing something wrong. You got to try and help them out as well because you're all in this, you know, working together. But they can certainly make your life terrible, and you could be very unsuccessful if they don't want to work with you.
Right. So what happens if you do, like, you know, God forbid you get an inside sales rep that you don't really get along with or you don't think is as competent as they could be, you know, what would you do in that situation?
I would do everything in my power to make sure that I understand where they're coming from. So my job is not only to make my company successful, but it's also to try and help my inside salesperson. So if I see a commonality of, you know, bids that we're quoting late or incomplete, you know, and we've had this in the past, a lot of it is, okay, how can I help you? Like, what can I do to make your life better? What can I
yeah.
do to make you successful? Am I doing something wrong? You know, try and figure out what drives them. what's going to make it, it's going to suck because you're going to have to do a lot more. Like, it's awesome if you could just drop a quote on somebody's desk and say, hey, man, can you quote this? And they just take care of it. But every once in a while, you're going to have that where somebody's not, you know, they're struggling or they don't have the motivation anymore or they've taken another job and they're just kind of coasting it out. And that happens. And that happens across all industries. But you want to just, you can't, you're going to catch more flies with honey, right? As the thing that's almost saying goes. So you can't just call somebody up and just yell at them and complain to them and say, you know, you're not doing your job or anything like that. So you just always want to be open-minded. And it's just, you never know what's going on behind the scenes. Like, you know, they could be having a, you know, family fight, or they could be arguing with their wife or their husband or whoever it might be, or family problems. So you just want to, you got to be nice. You have to understand that they might have something else going on. So I just try and be as open as possible. Hey, what can I do to help you? Is there something that I'm not understanding? If I got this type of information for you, would this make it easier? Or what type of information would help you out the best? What can I do? And essentially, you're working both sides. You try and work both sides, not only for your customer, but for your internal support team as well.
Yeah, that's great feedback. I definitely got a lot out of that. And so you've been in this industry for a while now. Like, what trends or what changes do you foresee in the future? Like, has anything changed in the last, like, 6 years or so that you've been in it, or is it for the most part pretty consistent?
Yeah. I wish I could say it was consistent, but it's not. The power industry is pretty down. A lot of stuff is going to wind and solar and all that good stuff.
Right.
But they're not building as often. I guess back in 2008 and 2009, before my time, it was booming, or that was right before the recession hit. Everything prior to that was just like booming. You know, they would have 4, 5, 10, 15 projects a year. And now I think they're down to like 3 or 4, what they call new builds, 5 or 6 new builds that they're typically going on during a year. So business is down, which means gross profit's down, which means people are just, people are taking jobs at -%, and they're beating up their vendors, they're beating up their manufacturers, they're trying to get a better price on the backside, which is not a good situation, because something goes awry, then back charges come, and if your project's late, then you eat the cost of that. So it could drive a lot of companies out of business. Now, that was for the power side. Natural gas side, man, I've never seen it crazier. I mean, again, I haven't been around long enough, but I mean, it's not uncommon to see multi-million-dollar projects, multiple of them. Like I said, like, we're getting, we're doing well. I think like the company as a whole is doing well. I think the industry right now is just the natural gas industry. A lot of people are laying a lot more pipelines now than they have in the past. The whole shale up in the Northeast is going extremely well in that Pittsburgh, West Virginia area. There's just a lot of natural gas, a lot of new pipelines, a lot of new companies coming in and trying to get their hands on it, distributing it to smaller communities, trying to get it down to different parts of the United States. There's a lot going on right now.
Gotcha. So you don't foresee, you know, like the wind or solar really picking, I guess, like a significant market share of the profits of natural gas?
Yeah, I can't speak intelligently to that too much. I'd have a hard time seeing the output of all these solar and wind companies coming in and just absolutely overpowering natural gas right now. I don't see that happening in the immediate future. And people and the companies and my customers don't see it that way either. I mean, they have projects out to 2020, you know, they're projecting out to 2021. So they at least don't see it stopping for some time. So that's my take on it. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's hard to predict the future unless there's like some crazy technological advances, but I guess you guys still have a huge obviously a huge percentage of the market share, and you know, it's probably going to take a long time before anything changes, right? Because it does take time to,
Right.
you know, for something to go like mainstream or to impact something, like you said, an industry that's been around for such a long time.
Right. Right.
Does government regulations and all that play a big part in, you know, like a lot of the profits and sort of these conglomerates and all that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, as far as I know, I mean, yeah, we don't get too heavily into it, but I've never had a greater appreciation for the process that these poor folks have to go through to get approvals, man. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, if they want to drill, if they want to put pipe into the ground, man, they have to go through so many permits, and it's a very long process, and it gets backed up extremely quickly. And all it takes is just for one little red mark to come up on a permit, and boom, that thing's delayed for another 2 months.
Yeah.
I mean, it plays a huge part in it. And a lot of it, I mean, there's a lot of science that goes into this, and a lot of studies, and a lot of these firms get involved in making sure that they're doing the right thing or they're doing things properly. So it's a very long process. I have a great appreciation for the people that are doing that, man, because I would not have the patience for stuff like that.
Yes, I mean, this is probably not too, like a little bit off topic, but so do you think there's like a perfect amount of regulation so to get everything approved, or do you think it's like it should be less regulated or more regulated, or is it they just fine?
Davidson, I wish I could speak intelligently on that one, man. It's so far above my pay grade, man. Those engineers are something else, dude. You know, I
Yeah.
just couldn't even talk about it. Wish I could.
Nah, I'm just messing with you. Well, no, I mean, I think this is all very helpful. I mean, obviously, I learned a lot about, you know, just this is like a totally new industry for me. Like industrial sales, like you said, you can make a lot of money. It's just not spoken too much about in the subreddit. So I was just very curious, and I'm sure others would as well. I often hear feedback from people that listen to the podcast in different industries, like, oh wow, that was fascinating. Like, I didn't know about that. So thanks for sharing that. So I think,
Yeah.
you know, a lot of people will get something out of it. And I really actually enjoyed what you said about, you know, just taking responsibility, right? Like, let's say like you do have an inside salesperson that's struggling, like really just being of service, right? Being a leader, being just communicating, like, hey, like I'm a partner with you. Like, what can I do to make your life easier? And just, you know, taking ownership of and taking initiative of just trying to help out in any way you can. But it's definitely, I got a lot of, you know, takeaways from our conversation today.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And it's good talking about this stuff. I mean, industrial, construction, engineering, I mean, it's not sexy. It's not what's cool. It's not what is new. I mean, it's been around for years and years and years. And like I said, my industry is an older industry. But it's, you know, these guys got to retire at some point, and somebody's got to take it over. And that's what a lot of my, you know, my colleagues and my counterparts, we're just riding out the storm until it happens. You know, so you're seeing that next generation kind of filter in. But yeah, it's fun. It's a good industry. It's a good old boy industry. Everybody knows everybody. You know, and you know, you have to take that into consideration too, man. You have a reputation. You know, if word gets out that
Yeah.
you're burning bridges, you're talking trash, you're doing stuff behind the scenes that's not too ethical, word gets around
Yeah.
and boom, you're out of the industry, man, and that's it, you know. So you got to be a little bit cautious with who you talk to and how you work your business. But it's certainly a fun one. It's certainly fun. So.
Yeah, and that's a great point too, that, you know, I think people often underestimate the importance of infrastructure, right? Like the pipelines and the power and just things that we just take for granted. It's like, you know, obviously Rockefeller and Andrew Carnegie and, you know, all these guys created like infrastructure, right? With Rockefeller, with the gas and oil and kerosene, and, you know, with Andrew Carnegie with the steel, just infrastructure for buildings, like all these things people don't really talk about because, like you said, it's not sexy. But these guys were like multi-billionaires, right? So it's
Right.
something that, you know, we take for granted, but it's like a necessity to live. So it's, yeah, I mean, I definitely, I see your strategy, you know, I guess, like you said, because sometimes going to a less competitive, I guess I would consider like tech more competitive in the sense that everyone's
Yeah.
trying to get into it. Sometimes that's not the best thing because you're competing with millions of others, whereas maybe you're competing with just thousands of others, right? So, I guess it just depends on how you want to approach it and how you look at it.
Yeah, and once you get in, man, you get in, because you're so valuable in the industry because there's not too many of us. A lot of the people that get into this industry, I mean, I took a break from the industry and I was back within a year. I just thought that was going to be the end of it. I was done with it and took a year off and was immediately thrown back right into the same company, different industry, but same type of sales process, same everything. It was, once you're in, you're in, man. You're going to have a job for life. At least that's the way I see it. I mean, people don't leave this industry and completely change their, you know, do a complete 180 and change their, their goals or, you know, their industry, essentially. Once you're in this industry, you typically stay in it in some capacity. And, like, for right now, like, your progression, you think of guys that, you know, there's a big company called Fastenal that's in the industry. And they do a lot of, you know, like, little stuff that you know, sit at people's shops. They have little kiosks, basically vending machines. But they do other large industrial supplies. But that's smaller size. And then you move on to the pipe and the fittings for projects. And then you move on to the engineering. You know, it's kind of a progression. So your next step would typically be with an engineering firm to work these not multi-million dollar pipelines, but you're working multi-million dollar projects and multiple of them across the United States. And now you're selling directly to an engineering or directly to a utility or to a city. You know, if somebody wants to build a brand new skyscraper, your company is going to build the skyscraper, but you're selling it to the city, you know? So it progressively gets going. It's a fun industry, man. It's good.
Yeah. So on that note, you know, if you do, you know, happen to inspire some folks to want to learn more about, like you say, industrial sales, you know, more of like the engineering and the power and the stuff that you're doing, you know, how can they reach out to you if you know, they happen to be curious or interested in, you know, how would you even start and what would you suggest?
Well, funny you should say that. We're actually hiring in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, if you know anybody. But also, I mean, I'm on LinkedIn. I think I'm sure you're going to post this on Reddit. You're more than welcome to tag me in and do whatever you need to do. But I'm definitely open to talking to some folks, man. I'd love to hook up with anybody that's willing to talk about it and learn a little bit more. You know, there's only so much I could talk about, but I can, if there's any crazy questions or like anything like that, I can certainly get them in touch with somebody that has a better idea or more knowledgeable than I am. But they're more than welcome to reach out to me, any way they would like to.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Chris. You know, you've always been such a helpful resource, like from the first time I reached out to you just to kind of pick your brains, you know, cause you do have, you know, a lot of decent experience, like, thanks for, you know, helping out the community, and thanks for, you know, letting us into your world. It's pretty fascinating. I had no idea a lot of stuff you spoke about. I mean, it's interesting because it is different, but at the same time, it's almost identical too. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So,
man, yeah, it was good. It was good talking with you. You asked some good questions. I think you kept the conversation rolling. I hope I didn't take up too much of your time. But I definitely certainly enjoyed it. Hopefully that I informed some folks, and, you know, like I said, if you got any questions, just reach out and I will certainly get back to you. I have a lot of time in hotels, so plenty of time to write and talk. So just let me know.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks again, Chris. I'll post this very shortly.
All right, sounds good, Davidson. I appreciate it, man.
Okay, thanks.
Yes, sir. Yeah.